You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Ignition sequence start.
Oh, okay, Olajuwon has David Robinson just bamboozled.
LA out of the corner for three, hit it!
Don't ever underestimate the heart of a champion.
The Houston Rockets select Yao Ming.
McGrady at the buzzer. Yeah!
Chris Paul puts it up.
Goes to Hart on Thompson, steps right, shoots for the win, a three, he got it!
I know what we need to do. I know exactly what we need to do.
Russell Westbrook.
James Harden.
I know what's at stake.
It's going to be scary. Not for us.
What's up, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. I am your host, Jackson Gatlin, at JT Gatlin on Twitter, producer with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship here in Houston. Today, this early Sunday morning, we're going to do a bit of a double breakdown because we had a back-to-back over the weekend. So Friday night, the Rockets faced the Pacers here in town, and then they flew out immediately, went straight up to Minnesota to play the Timberwolves on Saturday night. So we'll do Pacers in this first segment, Timberwolves in the second segment, and then in the third segment, I'll just kind of share some of my main takeaways from these two games combined as a whole. So starting first with the Pacers game, honestly, this was the second game in this stretch of eight games that I thought was going to be really difficult for the Rockets. Obviously, no Eric Gordon. He's going to be gone probably until December-ish. Then you've got no Clint Capella, no Daniel House, both guys day-to-day with the injuries that they've sustained. And it's kind of a trap game. You're undermanned. The Pacers, of course, are missing Victor Oladipo and Miles Turner, so they're missing some of their key guys as well, but they're playing very solid basketball. Nate McMillan's doing a great thing with that squad. They play a great brand of team basketball. Sabonis has been huge. He's putting up, there's an argument to be made for Sabonis to be an all-star this season, and rightfully so. He's putting up ridiculous numbers this year, but the Rockets as a whole, the game wasn't, it felt pretty even for the most part until that fourth quarter where they really did kind of, they fell into that, 88-84 hole, and then went on a 14-0 run led by 12 points from James Harden, who scored the back end of that. So I don't know who it was who scored the first 2 points of that 14-0 run. But James Harden had a personal 12-0 run. And that was more or less what sealed the game. The Pacers were able to kind of cut the lead back down to six near the very end. But it was pretty much done for. And then you had Tyson Chandler with a very timely tip-in to kind of seal the game more or less at the very end of regulation. Now, just a quick tangent on Tyson Chandler. He has looked good. Ben and I made the comparison in our most recent joint pod that he could very easily play a role similar to Dikembe Mutombo from back in those late 2000s Rockets teams where Deke was the older veteran backup center to the young star that was Yao Ming, or the star that was in his prime in Yao Ming. And Clint Capella is no Yao Ming, make no mistake. We're not making that comparison. But the fact that you have a guy who apparently can dial back the clock a little bit, you know, Tyson Chandler at 37 years old, his 19th year in the NBA, there were some concerns about how much he really had left in the tank. And even myself at points said, you know, this isn't going to work out. He doesn't fare well against the smaller, faster, more athletic bigs. And there's definitely places where you have to pick and choose your spots on where you're going to use Tyson Chandler. But for the most part, in this Pacers game, as well as in the game against the Timberwolves, he looked good. He looked maybe not springy, but he doesn't look like a 37-year-old center in his 19th year in the NBA. He's putting in productive minutes. In the Pacers game, he was a plus 24, which was the highest plus-minus rating on the entire team. He only had 2 points and six rebounds, but when he's on the court, his defensive presence just by simply being on the court is a huge boon to this Rockets franchise, to this Rockets organization, to the team as a whole. Knowing that you have that guy behind you, that true defensive anchor, Capella provides you a lot of that as well. But with him out, you've got Tyson Chandler, who started both games, kind of broke the rule early about Tyson Chandler not playing back-to-backs, and you really had to do that with Westbrook sitting out on the second half of that back-to-back as well because of his offseason knee scope. You're just too undermanned, and so it makes sense. You break the rule this one time. You let Tyson get his rest on Monday or the following, what is it, Wednesday, when the Rockets play their next couple games. You'll get Tyson his rest when in due time, when he needs it. But right now, Clint Capella out. You have to start him. You need him. You got big minutes from Isaiah Hartenstein in the Timberwolves game. Didn't get much of anything out of him. Didn't get a huge game out of him in the Pacers game. But overall, James Harden with another incredible night. It's just, how many more times can we say we've just become numb to his performances? 44 points, 8 rebounds, 5 assists, 4 steals. But he doesn't play defense. Get out of here with that. James Harden is not going to be a lockdown defender, but he plays passing lanes well. Sometimes they are risky gambles, yes. Other times, it's because he's playing stellar post defense, and he knows how to just kind of jab his hand in there real quick and tap the ball away and force a turnover on a big. James Harden is not a bad defender. He has bad defensive awareness at times. And I harped on him about that earlier this season. But at no point did I call him a net negative defender. He just has bad awareness and at times bad effort. But when he wants to, when James is dialed in, which it feels like he's been dialed in these past few games, which is, it's just a world of difference when you watch him play defense, when he's dialed in versus when he's just not as focused or not paying attention off the ball. And a lot of that comes from in these past few games. It's felt like, in a way, the refs are not, I don't want to say the refs aren't calling fouls for him or swallowing their whistles or whatnot, but you had Pat Bev, who was riling him up in the Clippers game, in the Pacers game. He wasn't getting his early fouls that he's accustomed to. He was kind of fighting through a lot of contact. Same thing with the T-Wolves. And when James gets to this mindset where he's playing angry, where he's having to fight harder than normal because he's not getting the fouls he's used to, things like that, I think it causes him to focus in on the game more. And I think it causes him to focus in on the game more, even on the defensive end, not just from the offensive angle where he's playing more aggressive, getting to the basket harder, looking to just finish through all the contact because he knows he's not going to get the foul call. That's that super aggressive, angry version of James Harden that we all love to watch play. But I think he also turns it up on defense. I think he really hones himself in and focuses on the elements of the game that he can impact when the referees are either swallowing their whistles or just, you know, maybe letting him play rough, whatever you want to call it. He then focuses on himself. And I think in years past, he's gotten in his own head about it when he drives to the basket and he's not getting the foul calls that he's used to. We've seen it in the past with James where he maybe looks rather to get the foul call rather than to finish. And I think he's outgrown that old habit. And I think he's been out of that habit for a couple of years now, but the national media would still have you believe that James Harden simply drives to the basket with the intent to get fouled and shoot free throws, not with the intent to actually finish. But that's an old take that it was true at one point. There were plenty of times in the past that James would look to simply get a foul rather than look to finish, and it was mind-boggling to me when he would do that. But now, James just looks to finish. He just goes in. He's trying to score the ball. If he gets a foul, great. If people are going to slap at him, if they're going to hack him on the arms, great. He's going to get an and one, or he's going to get a couple free throws if it's really a hard foul and he can't finish the shot. But James is so crafty, so creative, that he's going to find a way to get up his points, and that's exactly what he's doing right now. Other guys of note, Ben McLemore is filling his role nicely. He's filling that Gerald Green-esque role as your just designated volume three-point shooter. I won't say designated three-point sharpshooter because he's not shooting a phenomenal percentage as of yet. He's 4 of 11 in the Pacers game. It's not bad. It's not phenomenal. He's not a sharpshooter. He's a volume three-point shooter. Think Gerald Green. Think J.R. Smith. Maybe Jamal Crawford. He's a guy who's going to get up a lot of threes, and just by sheer volume alone, he's going to hit some of them. He's going to get plenty of wide-open looks playing with James Harden and Russell Westbrook, and that's exactly what's happening. 11 three-point attempts, hit 4 of them. Finished the game with 21 points. Westbrook, 17 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. overall, a really inefficient shooting night for Westbrook, 5 of 21, 1 of 6 from downtown. He did have that critical three at the very end of the game where it kind of pushed the lead back to about 10, I want to say. And that was maybe not the dagger per se, but it gave the Rockets enough breathing room that they didn't really have to worry about letting the game slip out of hand at the very end. So all these things considered, you also had Austin Rivers coming off the bench who didn't hit a single three, was 0 of 4 from downtown. I'd really like to see Austin get his three-point percentage up there, but he did finish with 10 points, 5 boards, an assist, a couple steals. Austin Rivers, for what he provides offensively, it's kind of like the cherry on top, honestly, because what he really gives you is his defense. And maybe I didn't highlight this enough in the Clippers game with him guarding Lou Williams, but Austin gives you such a strong perimeter defender. His ability to fight over screens, to fight through contact, to fight through picks, to do whatever he needs to do to keep his man in front of him and to make it hard for them to score. He is a great on-ball defender. And just what he provides you as far as the offensive end with an additional playmaker, an additional ball handler when you don't have Russell Westbrook or James Harden in the game, or when the play collapses and maybe they're doubling James or Westbrook and you need somebody to create, Austin's ability to be able to create off the dribble is huge, either for his teammates or for himself, his ability to finish around the basket. Austin Rivers fills that sixth or seventh man role really, really well, and having him and a healthy Eric Gordon when he comes back for this Rockets squad is going to be a really big thing come December. And we are back here for segment two of our double recap episode, covering the Rockets' 125-105 win over the Minnesota Timberwolves, giving them 7 straight wins, improving them to 10-3 on the young season. And really quickly, I know I said I'd do Pacers in segment one, Timberwolves segment two, and then some kind of broader ideas in segment three, and I'm going to break that rule already in segment two, just because I want to revisit really quickly on Russell Westbrook, and I don't think I paid enough attention to him in the first segment, and I want to just double back for a moment and emphasize the fact that we've only seen Westbrook play a really strong game in one game so far this season. He's had some okay games, and he's had some bad games. He's had plenty of inefficient games, but we've only seen him play one really stellar game, and that was the away game against the Pelicans. In that game, that was the game where he shot 6 of 8 from mid-range, where he turned into Chris Paul somehow, started draining every mid-range bucket he took. But besides that one really stellar game, the Rockets have still found ways to win, even though Westbrook isn't playing up to his potential just yet. Now, whether that's some lingering issues from the offseason knee scope, whether that's the dislocated fingers on his shooting hand causing him some issues, you know, his touch around the rim not quite what it used to be, whatever it may be, whatever is preventing Westbrook from being the best version of himself, not even the version of Westbrook that we would ideally like to have, the one that shot 35% from behind the arc during his MVP campaign. I don't expect him to get to those numbers. That's not even what I'm asking for. I'm just asking for the Russell Westbrook that they had last year in Oklahoma City, the one who could finish around the rim, the one who was averaging a triple-double. Just if we could just have him on a regular basis, this team is going to be really hard to beat, because you've got James Harden, who Mike D'Antoni had an amazing quote after the Minnesota Timberwolves game. He goes, I think it would give you confidence, said Coach Mike D'Antoni. You're playing with a bazooka out there. He called James Harden a bazooka. And that's very true. Bazooka, flamethrower, whatever you want to call him. James Harden is an insane offensive player. The best, by and large, the best offensive player in the NBA. And so if you get Russell Westbrook playing to some semblance of what we know he's capable of playing to, and then you've got the role players surrounding them, this team is going to be really good. And the fact that, again, you've only seen this version of Russell Westbrook who's been struggling largely, he's still impacting the game. He's still finding ways to be impactful. Against the Pacers specifically, again, his stat line against the Pacers, he finished with 17 points, 8 rebounds, 6 assists. He had a steal. He was a plus 9. He was largely inefficient. He hit all 6 of his free throws, though, so that's a good sign. His free throw stroke is shaky at best. But when Westbrook gets it figured out, and we've already seen it, we saw it a lot in that Pacers game. Kudos to Westbrook. He was looking to get teammates involved rather than taking his own shot. Now, he did still shoot up 21 of them things, but he was looking to get teammates involved, and people were just missing wide-open looks. Westbrook got so many wide-open looks for so many different shooters throughout that game. I don't have his potential assist numbers in front of me, but it must have been in the high teens, at least. And that's what Westbrook gives you. He creates opportunities for other people to score, and right now the Rockets just don't have their full cast of characters in place to benefit from Westbrook's ability to create. When you've got Daniel House back in those spots, when you've got an unhampered Eric Gordon back in those spots catching and shooting those threes, ideally more of them will be going in. The offense will continue to be potent. But even during this stretch, basically since the horrible loss in Miami, so for games played through the 16th of November, throughout the entirety of the Rockets' 7-game winning streak, the Rockets actually rank number 3 in defensive rating at 99.9, and they rank number 5 in offensive rating at 112.4, and they rank number 1 in net rating during that span at 12.6. That's an insane net rating over that 7-game win streak. Now, of course, a handful of those games, probably the first 4 or so, were against some lower-tier competition, but you did beat the final 3. The last 3 have been the Clippers, the Pacers, and now the Timberwolves. Those are good teams. Those are teams that are going to be vying for playoff spots down the line as we get towards April. So those wins count. And continuing, sometimes, look, I said it earlier when they got the Memphis win, and then they got the Golden State win, and then they got the Bulls win. Sometimes you need tune-up games. Sometimes you just need games against an inferior opponent to just walk out there like they're a punching bag. You get your reps in, you do the right things because it's against an opponent that's easier, and then it feels more natural when you're doing them against a tougher opponent. So the Rockets did just that. They beat the 4 teams they were supposed to beat, and now they're building upon that, and they have what I think is the largest active win streak in the NBA. Unless Boston. Did Boston lose one yet? No. Yes? No, they haven't lost yet. Never mind. So the Rockets are playing a good brand of basketball, and that's what it can be boiled down to. And they haven't even seen the best version of Westbrook yet. But what they did get, they got some pretty good versions of Christopher Clemens. Is it Christopher Clemens? Just Chris Clemens. We're just going to call him Chris Clemens because I'm not actually 100% sure. Either way, they got the best versions, or some pretty good versions, of Chris Clemens and Isaiah Hartenstein last night. Those two guys played a significant role in the win over the Timberwolves for the severely undermanned Rockets team. You trot out a starting lineup of Austin Rivers, James Harden, Ben McLemore, PJ Tucker, and Tyson Chandler. 37-year-old, year 19, Tyson Chandler. And then your bench brigade consists of Chris Clemens, Isaiah Hartenstein, Thabo Sefolosha, who got just 14 minutes, and then Gary Clark, who played 1 minute and drained a 3 at the end of regulation, basically. Clark continues to be in the doghouse with Mike D'Antoni, but at least he's letting Hartenstein and Clemens get some burn. Both of those guys had pretty phenomenal games. Clemens was huge in the first half. He was a little quiet in the second half. He finished the game 19 points, 5 of 9 from behind the arc, 7 of 11 overall. Didn't do much else other than score. He did have a couple steals, but his impact on the game was definitely felt during the periods where James Harden sat, both mostly in the first half, a little bit in the second half. He did drain a couple more threes in that second half, or one more three in that second half. But Clemens really lit it up in that first half when James Harden sat down for the first time. He is not afraid to shoot the ball. And that's so critical in an offense that values three-point shooting as much as the Rockets do, is you have to not be afraid to shoot the basketball. Thabo Sefolosha, PJ Tucker's a culprit of this at times, being a little gun-shy, getting the ball and being open and then just not pulling the trigger on it. We hear Craig Ackerman and Matt Bullard say it all the time. Oh, PJ should have shot that. Oh, Thabo should have shot that. It's true. This offense prides itself on getting up more than 50 three-point attempts a game, or striving to shoot that many threes a game. So when you're passing up looks that are open, even if for just a second, you just can't do that. And Chris Clemens is not one of those guys. The moment Chris touches the ball, he's thinking about shooting it. Same thing for McLemore. A little bit less so for Austin Rivers. I wouldn't call Austin Rivers a hesitant shooter, but Austin also does have the ability to create for himself off the drive. He can drive to the back. He can drive to the bucket and attempt to get his own shot. So he's not as much of an offensive liability as Tucker or Tabo Cephalosha when they don't shoot the three. If Austin chooses to not shoot the three, he can still do something with the ball. The offense doesn't come to a grinding halt. Same thing for Clemens. A little bit less so for McLemore, but he's still in there. He's not afraid to put the ball on the floor and try and create something. So it's important to be able to get shots off quickly in this Rockets offense, and that's exactly what Chris Clemens does. Isaiah Hartenstein played a great game. He played big last night against Karl Anthony Towns. He was a plus 26 in his time on the court. Second highest plus minus on the team. Clemens was first at plus 32. Isaiah Hartenstein, plus 26. He only finished with 6 points. He's 1-2 from the floor, 4-4 from the free throw line, but he had 16 huge rebounds. 11 defensive, 5 offensive. He played his role and he played it well. He set good screens. He was active on defense. He did all the little things that you want to do. And again, I harp on this in the final segment because I recorded my segments a little bit out of order today. Normally I do them 1-2-3. Today I went 3-1-2 for scheduling reasons. I knew segment 3 would run a little bit long, so I did that one first. But Isaiah Hartenstein and Chris Clemens play with so much effort when they're out there on the court. And when you get those young guys mixed in with some of the older, more veteran NBA players, gives you a unique level of basketball IQ, savvy veteran leadership, youthful energy that makes you a dangerous team. And I'll harp on that a little bit more in segment 3. I don't want to get too much further into that, but James Harden, again, 49 points, 5 rebounds, 6 assists. I mean, what more can you ask for him? 9 of 11 from the free throw stripe, 8 of 22 from downtown, 16 of 41 overall. Pretty inefficient night by James Harden's usual standards. Less free throw attempts than he's used to getting so far this season. Not that great shooting from the field. Definitely, you know, a little underwhelming from behind the arc. But when you're down as many players as the Rockets are, James just is going to take more shots. He played 39 minutes on the second night of a back-to-back. And the craziest thing to me was Jonathan Fagan, beat writer for the Houston Rockets for the Chronicle. I'm sure all of you already know of him. Tweeted after the game, and I retweeted this, was that James was in the hallway doing a post-game workout on the second night of a back-to-back in which he just played 39 minutes, scored 49 points, and largely, I don't want to say by himself because he did have some contributors, but in a game where he had to dump 49 points in 39 minutes into, he was just back in the back hallway having a post-game workout, doing curls, doing push-ups, whatever it is he's working out. And Russell Westbrook, and this was the quote from Jonathan Fagan, Russell Westbrook had walked by and said, "What are you doing, man?" And James goes, "I'm just trying to get better." That's greatness right there. That's leading by example. James Harden may not be the vocal leader necessarily that Chris Paul is or that Russell Westbrook was back in Oklahoma City, but he leads by example. He goes out there and he lets his play do the talking. He leads by example by doing these post-game workouts, by putting in the hours. There's a reason that his step back is so lethal. There's a reason that he seemingly overnight, over that one offseason going into the 17-18 season, started to incorporate that floater slowly into his game, and now it's a huge part of his game. The floater is largely an inefficient shot. It's technically a mid-range shot. But James Harden has perfected it to the point where he is no longer one-dimensional in the sense that, or two-dimensional, in the sense that he's going to shoot a three or going to try and get to the basket for a layup, a dunk, or a foul. That's kind of what he did in the past, and that floater has given him more of a dynamic offense that truly has made him unguardable. McLemore chipped in 20 points, 4 of 11 from downtown, 7 of 16 overall. Couple free throws mixed in there. He had some rebounds, a couple steals, very energetic on defense, very active. He did have a couple slip-ups here and there throughout the game, and you could tell when they happened, whether it was he rushed up a three-point shot or turned the ball over, didn't quite have the handle on it. He did have three turnovers, didn't have the handle on it before he tried to drive or before he tried to go up with a shot. And you can kind of see the frustration on James Harden when that happens, because he, fires the ball to McLemore in the corner, and McLemore starts going up for the shot before he fully has the ball, and then it kind of just bounces off his foot and goes out of bounds. And you can see the exasperation from James, where he's like, come on, man, just get the ball first, grab it, secure it, then shoot your shot. But overall, strong game from McLemore. He's putting in strong minutes. I don't think he's going to average what he's averaging right now once we get Daniel House and Eric Gordon and Clint Capella back in the rotation. But knowing you have a guy that can fill that Gerald Green-esque role of just being a volume shooter is huge. Austin Rivers with a strong game, 19 points. Again, 0-4 from downtown. His three-point shot is largely missing, which is something that he's got to get worked out. If that's my major gripe for Austin Rivers right now, it's that his three-point shot is not looking so hot these past couple games. But 8 of 17 overall, had a handful of assists, got a steal, got a block. Again, always playing great defense when he's out there on the court. He led the lineups when James was on the bench. A combination of him and Chris Clemens were the primary ball handlers when James Harden sat for the few minutes that he sat in this game. He didn't sit much, but when he did sit, somebody has to handle the ball, and that was largely the responsibility of Austin Rivers and a little bit Chris Clemens. And they did well. In a game that nobody would have blamed them for just rolling over and saying, you know what, we're missing Capella, we're missing Gordon, we're missing House, Westbrook is resting. They could have chosen to rest Tyson Chandler, but they didn't. They came out, they said, we're going to win this game. We're going to win the game against the Pacers, even though we're down three guys. We're going to win this game against the Timberwolves, even though we're down four guys. Three starters. You're down three starters against a playoff caliber team in the Minnesota Timberwolves. Sure, they're missing Andrew Wiggins, but you're missing three starters and a year-in, year-out sixth man of the year candidate, and you're playing G-leaguers in Chris Clemens and Isaiah Hartenstein, who are getting 30-some-odd minutes this game. And you come away with a win in dominant fashion. It was pretty tightly contested that first half, 31-30 in the first quarter, 33-32 in the second quarter, 64-62 at halftime. And they kind of broke it open a little bit in that third, Rockets 29-23. And then that fourth quarter, they just ran away with it. 32-20 scoring in that fourth quarter. It was the James Harden dagger three, where Saunders said, nope, and we're giving up. Waved the white flag, put in all of his bench units, or put in his entire bench rotation, called it a game. It was a good win for the Rockets. Overall, the last three games have been huge wins, and this team is playing some exceptional basketball at this point. And if they can keep doing this and build on it as they get their rotation guys back in position to further succeed, to continue playing this brand of basketball, they're going to be tough down the line. They really are. I'm expecting great things from this team. And before we get to our final segment, quick word from our friends over at MyBookie. You can use your basketball knowledge to prove that you have what it takes at MyBookie.ag, where they make it easy to play and even easier to get paid. You can use promo code LOCKEDONNBA, and MyBookie will match 50% of your first deposit. If you're listening on the go, if you can't visit MyBookie right now, you can find this and all other offers from Locked On sponsors at LockedOnPodcast.com/offers. Okay, everybody, and welcome back into Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball. For this final segment, I basically want to make three points of emphasis moving forward based off of these most two recent games, but just kind of something that we've really understood or known for a while now. Obviously, there's people constantly on social media, especially Twitter, petitioning to play Gary Clark. And that extends to the other young guys as well, Chris Clemens, Isaiah Hartenstein. These young NBA guys, they aren't proven commodities, but you roughly know what you can get out of them. And having guys like that intermingled with your regular roster when it comes back could be a huge benefit. I said it last night, and I'm going to re-up on that right now, and this is my first point, is that these young guys like Gary, like Chris, like Isaiah, they go out there and they play with so much energy. They don't take plays off. They do whatever they need to do every single play, both sides of the court, no matter how exhausted they are. They are out there. They're just out there hooping. That's what they're doing. They're out there giving it their all because they don't know when the next chance is going to be. They don't know when they're going to get minutes next. Eric Gordon, he knows he's going to play every game. Obviously, he's injured right now, but you know what I mean. When Eric Gordon's in the rotation, he knows he plays every game. So is there going to be a play or two where he takes off or where he's not giving 110% effort? Guy gets, you know, he gets beaten on the drive and he just kind of wait, you know, throws his hands up. Where's my help defense? Whatever. Sure. Yeah, that's going to happen. Everybody that's in the actual rotation has a sense of job security. We'll go with that. Whereas Clemens, Hartenstein, Clark, they don't have that. So when they actually get on the court, they are trying so hard to make an impression. And that's exactly what Clemens and Hartenstein did in the Timberwolves game. Both those guys came out and had career games. And it's so important that Mike D'Antoni remembers that these guys are capable, maybe not of having career games every night, but that Mike D'Antoni remembers that he's got two capable players on his bench. I'm going to argue three because I think Gary's capable too, in spurts. But he's got these young, capable players on his bench, and he needs to actually sprinkle them into the lineup. So rather than having a lineup where you've got Clemens, Hartenstein, and maybe even Clark all out on the floor at the same time with only two of your normal rotation guys, you could put one or two of them out when your rotation is back to full strength, when you've got Clint Capella back, when you've got Eric Gordon back, when you've got Daniel House back. Because then you're not so worried about the multitude of rookie mistakes or young player mistakes that they may or may not make while they're out there on the court. If you've got them surrounded by another four guys that have experience, that have been playing at the NBA level, that understand what they're doing, that understand their spots on the court, then they're going to learn from that. If you put Chris Clemens out there next to Russell Westbrook in those Russ-only lineups, you bet Russell Westbrook is going to find Chris Clemens for some wide-open three-pointers. And that could be a huge benefit to Mike D'Antoni, to the Rockets, to the team as a whole. Surround Westbrook with shooters. Hell, if you put Isaiah Hartenstein out there with Westbrook, suddenly Isaiah can stretch the floor a little bit. I actually don't know what he's shooting right now off the top of my head from three, as far as the G League is concerned. But I'm sure it's a decent percentage. It's probably not lights out, but I'm sure it's above 30%. So you can go five out, essentially, with Hartenstein and not lose size, which is huge. Because right now, the only way the Rockets can go five out is if you play P.J. Tucker at center, or Thabo Sefolosha at center, or Harden at center. That's the only way they go five out right now, because Tyson can't stretch the floor. Capella can't stretch the floor. So if you go five out with Hartenstein in the Westbrook, in the Russ-only lineups, then suddenly you're creating all this extra space for Westbrook. You're giving Hartenstein minutes and a chance to flourish. And there might be matchups where Tyson Chandler just isn't that suited to handle a matchup against another stretch five big, where Hartenstein might make more sense to play him. Plus, you've got the issue with Tyson Chandler. He's 37, 19th year in the NBA. He might, you know, he's going to need some rest. He wasn't even supposed to play this into the back-to-back, but because the Rockets were so devastated by injuries, they had to have him play. And they were lucky to come up with these games from Hartenstein and from Clemens, who were definite impact players in this game. Clemens, again, finishing with 19 points, shot the lights out of the ball. Hartenstein, 16 rebounds, 11 defensive rebounds, 5 offensive rebounds, which those were huge. The possession, whenever you keep a possession alive by securing an offensive rebound, that's incredible, especially for a team that is as potent offensively as the Houston Rockets are. So that was my main point. That's my first big point, is that hopefully when the roster is back at relatively full health, or as the other rotation players start coming back into the fold, Mike D'Antoni remembers that he has the likes of Clemens, Hartenstein, Clark, sitting on the bench, guys who can play and who can contribute to this team down the line as they get their rotation back in order. Because then you're not dealing with a 8-man rotation just 10 games into the season. You have a 9th and a 10th and an 11th person on the roster. Do the Rockets probably still need to secure a more established wing player, or maybe a 4-5 combo big or a 3-4 combo forward before the trade deadline? I think so, absolutely. I think they absolutely have to secure somebody to shore up that 9th roster spot, so you have a guaranteed commodity versus a Clemens or a Clark or a Hartenstein where you're not sure what you're going to get on any given night from them. That's an absolute must. But for now, as we move towards the trade deadline and as we progress throughout the season, those guys can get playing time and can contribute to a winning atmosphere and can contribute to this Rockets team in a positive fashion. My next point is there were a handful of plays last night, as I'm talking to you Sunday morning, there were a handful of plays from the Timberwolves game that I'm intrigued by because Harden actually ran some plays, I guess for himself, off the ball, where Austin Rivers or another player would start the action with Harden off ball. And it was only two or three times, I think, and only one of them resulted in a direct three-point attempt. But the fact that those are in there, that those are plays ready to be called at any moment, I want to see more of that when Russ comes back into the lineup, because the spacing with James and Russ on the court has been an issue. Because James hasn't had the clear driving lanes that he's used to having, simply because Russ just isn't a shooter. People don't have to worry about defending Russ. And it's an especially big issue when James kind of starts the action on the right side of the court and Russ is parked somewhere on the left side, because we all know James wants to eventually go back to his left. So if you've got Russ over there with his defenders sagging in, you know, away from Russ by about 10 feet sometimes, it's ridiculous. That defender becomes a really big, substantial help defender when it comes to guarding James Harden. So I would much rather see, and we've spoken about this before, I would much rather see Russ handle the ball to get James Harden wide open looks versus Harden handle the ball to get himself his own looks. Now, Harden is still wildly efficient at getting his own looks off, at getting his own shots off, and getting, arguably, they're not even open shots. At pretty much every step back he shoots, he's got a hand near him. But he still shoots a reliable percentage on those. It would just be a nice wrinkle in the offense to see James Harden have one to two plays in his repertoire where Russell Westbrook brings the ball up the court, James runs around a couple screens, whatever it may be, and gets a wide open look. Because we run those plays for other players. We run those plays for PJ. We run them for Ben McLemore. We run them for Eric Gordon. We run plays to get players wide open looks or to get them curling off of a screen and then attacking the basket against a broken defense. It would just be nice to see Westbrook instigate that offense and then Harden be the beneficiary of a defense that is scrambling to chase him around a screen, rather than, what did Kobe Bryant say in that interview, where Harden's constantly, he's squared up with the defense, or the defense is constantly squared up against him, so he doesn't get the luxury of attacking a broken defense. The defense is always set when it's getting ready to guard James. Again, a testament to his greatness, it doesn't matter. He's averaging almost 40 points a game now. In fact, I don't have the stats pulled up right in front of me, but I think it's above 40 after last night. Maybe not above 40. This is the problem when you record segments out of order. Anyways, the point still stands. I would like to see Russell Westbrook handle the ball a bit more when he and James are in the game, but not to get himself shots. I want to see him handle the ball a bit more to get James wide open shots. And we've seen it. We've seen Russ attack a defense and get a wide open look for Tucker, for House, for Gordon, for Harden. He's gotten everybody on the team a wide open look at some point in the 11 games that he's played with the Rockets. 11 games? 12 games? What are they, 10 and 3? 12 games. There we go. Nope, 11 games. He sat out the Timberwolves game. Wow. My apologies. Anyways, that point still stands. That's what I want to see. That was point number two, is I'd like to see James And seeing in that Timberwolves game that he's capable of running those routes that are normally the responsibility of Eric Gordon or McLemore or Tucker to run around a couple screens and get a wide open three, that's nice. It's good to know that James at least knows his spot in those plays so that we can potentially run them further down the line. Final point, the Rockets' defense. And this ties into point number one about the young guys, but the Rockets' defense has been so good. They've actually been, I want to say their defensive rating, they're ranked fifth. It's either fourth or fifth since the horrible Miami Heat loss. So not including that loss and not including the games earlier in the season, the Rockets are ranked fifth in defensive rating. Actually, they might be ranked first. I'm going to pull that back up. Had it up earlier, closed it down, which is 100% my fault. I should not have done that. Because now I have to actually pull it up on my laptop, which is going to take a second. But either way, as I get this found, the benefit to that Heat loss was that the Rockets, they really had to do some self-reflection. They had to take a look and they had to figure out, okay, what are we doing? What are we even trying to do here? Because at this point, they were 3-3 after the Heat loss because they'd already lost to the Nets. And they really had to do some self-evaluation. And they came out of that loss and have been one of the best defensive teams in the league since that game. Their offense has faltered a little bit, but they're still a top-tier offensive team. And part of that's just shooting. Part of that's just you have Russell Westbrook who's struggling with his shot. You had Eric Gordon who was struggling with his shot. Harden still isn't shooting his traditional percentage from behind the arc. And as he gets closer to his usual 37-38% instead of his 32-33% that he's sitting at right now, his numbers will continue to rise. But the team as a whole is playing such a different brand of basketball than they were through the first six games. And a lot of that I attribute to the Heat loss. They had to self-reflect. They had to look at it and they had to say, okay, what do we do? What do we change? How do we get to be the team we want to be? And sure, the competition during that stretch hasn't been phenomenal, but these last three wins have been. The Pacers are a playoff team in the East. The Timberwolves are playing great basketball. Were they without Andrew Wiggins? Absolutely. Was Kat still out there on the court? Absolutely. Were the Rockets down four rotation players? Yes, they were. So it doesn't really matter that the Timberwolves are missing Andrew Wiggins, because I think that's kind of a wash when you're missing four rotation players. They also beat the Clippers. The Clippers didn't have Paul George. Sure, the Rockets were missing three rotation players in that game. So either, any way you slice it, sorry, the Rockets were missing two rotation players against the Clippers, and they missed Capella for the fourth quarter. Either way, these three wins, and if they keep piling them on throughout this end of November stretch, I'm already fully impressed that they were 3-0. That back-to-back was the scariest one to me. I figured they were going to drop at least one of those games, and I figured it was going to be the Minnesota game, because you leave Houston late on Friday, fly all the way up to Minnesota, have to deal with a Minnesota team that's playing pretty good basketball behind Karl-Anthony Towns and Andrew Wiggins. Granted, Wiggins didn't play, but Kat has been dominant. So I thought that was going to be a trap game. I thought that was going to be one of the games, one of the two or maybe three games they dropped during this eight-game stretch. But here we are. They're 3-0 on the start of this really brutal November stretch. They've got five more games. I'm not counting the Hawks game at the very end of the month. They've got five more games against some really good opponents. I say really good. The Blazers are 4-8, but it's still Damian Lillard. It's still CJ McCollum. We won't see Carmelo Anthony in that game, but they're still a good team. And the Rockets have done all this with their defense. That's the important thing. They've been so great defensively. And a lot of that is mixing in some of the younger guys. You mix in these younger guys and they give you so much effort. So much hustle. They give you huffert, to quote Matt Bullard. But it's such an important element to be able to mix in some of those young guys. I mean, you can look back at Golden State and think about the important role that Jordan Bell, as a rookie, played on that team, and then as a sophomore. young players can contribute to basketball teams that have championship aspirations. It doesn't just have to be a mix of players who are in their prime or veteran players. You can have young guys contribute to a basketball team. And I think that the way that this Rockets team is functioning right now, when the rotation starts piecing itself back together, as they get Capella back, as they get Daniel House back, who may be available, House may be available for the Trailblazers game, which is tomorrow evening. No word yet on Capella's availability for that game. But getting House back would be great for that game. One less rotation player down. Getting Capella back is obviously going to be huge. And then getting Eric Gordon back is going to be incredible in about another 5 weeks or so. And once you get all those guys back, you get those guys healthy, you keep this defensive intensity up. I think what we've seen in this stretch, I think the Rockets could potentially push for being a top 10 defense. Will they be top five? No. I don't think that's realistic. But if they can keep their offense in the top three range and push their defense into the near top 10 or right on the cusp of being top 10, this team's going to be really hard to beat down the line. I think that's where we'll go ahead and leave things off for today. As always, thank you for tuning in. Now, if you want more content before our next show, social media is where everything's happening. I'm on there at JT Gatlin. Our analyst, Ben DuBose, is on there at Ben DuBose. And the show is on there, of course, at Locked On Rockets. Past that, there's Facebook, which can be found at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets. The website, LockedOnRockets.com. And of course, we've got our email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of these are different ways to consume content about your Houston Rockets. You can ask me questions about the team. You can make suggestions for the show, place advertising inquiries. Really, it's just a way for you to reach out to me to tell me if there's anything that we can do to improve this experience for you, our listeners. Beyond that, if you'd be kind enough to subscribe and rate the show on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, Himalaya, wherever it is that you listen to your podcasts, if you could please subscribe and give us a 5-star review. That's how you get the benefit of episodes straight to your inbox before they get published to the previously mentioned social media outlets. And then we get the benefit of looking attractive to potential advertisers and keeping this business model rolling along as the most regular podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. For this Sunday, November 17th episode, this is where we break. As always, thank you so much for listening, and I hope to have you back again very, very soon right here at Locked On Rockets, your daily podcast home for everything Houston Rockets basketball.